Yehuda and Yosef. Two, as the Medrash describes them, both of them were considered like malachim, the kings. They were like two kings that were vying against each other. And it says that there was respect in the words, but at the same time, there was also conveyed a message of strength and lack of fear. It says, Ki kamocha kefaro in the first passage. Yehuda said to him, let me speak one thing, biozne adoni, and do not be angry. Ki kamocha kefaro, because you are like Pharaoh. So, as Hirsch says, that he said it in the form of respect, to show his respect for Yosef, he says, that which I want to say to you should not excite your sensitiveness, for you are Pharaoh. I honor you as I honor Pharaoh. So if anything I say does not please you, don't think that it's because I don't honor you, because I would say this to Pharaoh also. And that is insinuate ki kamecha kefaro, that he meant that there's really no difference if I have to get rid of you. If you don't respond, we're ready to go to war also. So he was very strong in his determination. Now, why does Yehuda, the one that comes forward? So here is an interesting interpretation by the Goyen, by the Vilna Goyen, on the words, Vayigash Elov Yehuda. Because you know, in Chumash, every letter has a negina on it. You notice it has the trup, which we call. Now, the trup of the first passage is Vayigash Elov. You see the two signs on top of those words, and all the time they have an interpretation. We don't know what the meaning is, but the tamim have some significance. So the name of this tamim is Vayigash, the first three, is Vayigash Elov Yehuda, and it's Kadmo Ve'azlo Revi. Now the word Kadmo Ve'azlo got up and went forward. Revi, the fourth one. So he says, Ruven Shimon Levi Yehuda, that would be the fourth one. Then the next three is Vayomer Bi Adoni. Now in the words Vayomer Bi Adoni, it's called Zarko Munach Segol. So the Groh says, the Goyen says the following, that Yehuda in the previous chapter had said to Yaakov, I take responsibility to return Binyamin. And if I don't bring him back, I should not only lose this world, but v'chotosi l'cho kol ayomim, I'll also lose the world to come. So he had the most that at stake here if Binyamin doesn't go back to the father. So the meaning of these words in Aramaic again is Zarkor, Munach Segol means throwing out, Munach Segol from resting amongst the unique, meaning that Yehuda came forward, the fourth one. Why? Because Zarkor, he would be thrown out. He would lose Munach to rest Segol among the Segula, the chosen and the unique, meaning that he would lose his Elam Abba. So this is one example where the Groh shows you that the tamim, the interpretation, you could understand the significance of the passage just by understanding the trup, the way it's sung. Vayigash Elov Yehuda. That means we sing it in that way because of the tamim. And here the tamim give you the actual interpretation of the passage. So Yehuda spoke the words, and as the Malbim says, I'm not debating you, he says. There are two things. When you want to go to a din with someone, with a debate, you have to go and explain everything and, you know, and adjudicate the question and have judges to determine between both who is right and who is wrong. Yehuda didn't want this. He said, when you ask for clemency, then you don't need a court and you don't have to go through the whole thing if you're guilty or you're not guilty, who is right or wrong. All you have to do is ask for clemency. One thing, please forgive me. So that's what it says here, according to Malbim. Yidaver no avdecho dovor beozne adoni. Let me just speak one thing. I'm not going to go in to see if you're right or we're right. Ve'al yichar apcho beavdecho. Do not be angry. Ki chomocha kefaro, because you have the power of Pharaoh, and therefore you can forgive us and you can exonerate us if you choose to do so. And then he goes into the whole history, This was only a reason not to say he was right or wrong, but asking for his compassion. Because he says, when we first came, we told you that our father, we have an old father, the Yeled Zikunim, in sentence 20 I'm reading, and he has a son that was born of his old age, who is very small, Ochiv Meis, and the brother died, so the only one is, he is left, Levado, Ve'imo, Ve'aviv, Ahevo. He was the only remnant left from the mother, and the father therefore loves him. So you said, in sentence 21, bring him down here, I want to see. We said you can't, so you determined that it has to be, and then we tried to get our father. So the father answered us in 27, Atem yadaten, kishnayim yolda li ishti, you know that my wife bare me two sons, the yetzer echad meiti, and one son has gone away, and I haven't seen him until now. And if you'll take the second son and an accident happens, so I will go with my gray hair to the grave. And now, how could we come to the father? They're so close, and we'll see that the father is not here. So then the father will die with grief. And then if your question is, in 32, if your question is, why am I the one who's interceding? Because I gave my father the word, and therefore let me be in the place of Binyamin. So this was not, if you notice, he didn't say to Yosef, really debating what was right or what was wrong, although he told him the whole step by step. But the main emphasis that he wanted to do at the end is what he says in sentence 31. V'hoya kiroso, this is the crux, this is the climax of his petition, that when he will see that the child is not with him, so this will bring about the demise and the downfall. There is an interesting sentence, however, that's worth noting, that the Ramban notes in sentence 27. Atem yadatim, it says there that Yaakov Avinu said, you know, kishnayim yolda li ishti. Now, what does that mean, kishnayim yolda li ishti? That he only had two sons? We know that he had 12 sons. So Yaakov Avinu said, yolda li ishti, we know he had four wives. What does he use the expression, kishnayim yolda li ishti? So he says that the idea was Yaakov considered her to be his wife, the Ramban says, the true wife. Atam, ki Yaakov lo lokach isha midaite rak rochel. If you look back at the four wives that he took, the one that he chose and that he had the initiative was only Rachel. Leah was given to him, tricked into it. Zilpah and Bilhah were given by it says the initiative was taken both by Rachel first, because she didn't have any children, so she gave her maidservant. And then you had Zilpah of Leah, because Leah wanted that if she had children from the maidservant, she should also have. But the only one that Yaakov Avinu on his own went ahead was Rachel. So that's why it says, ki Yaakov lo lokach isha rak Rachel. And that's what he means, yolda li ishti, my wife. And he's saying like that, if you will claim, if there are 12 people, Yosef says, so what if he loses one son? It's a terrible tragedy, but you're gonna mourn till he'll mourn until his grave. So he says, it's not one son that he's losing, it's from his wife. The wife that he chose himself, this would be his second loss. And the brothers here recognized, and this is interesting, the brothers here recognized that Yaakov Avinu really felt closer, because Rachel was really his wife. It seems at this time there was no more hiding the fact, because they're saying that the father said, Kishnayim yolda li ishti, my chosen wife. And they seem to be able to accept this, which is interesting, because the whole dispute happened because they questioned who is more important, Yosef or them, from jealousy. Yet by this stage, it seems that they were able to accept that. Now, it says right afterwards that Yosef could no longer contain himself. Le'yochel Yosef le'hisapak, and Yosef could no longer contain himself. And why did he do, what does that mean? He told the people, please leave. In 45, 1, he could not restrain himself, and he told the people, please go away. And there was no one there when Yosef became known or revealed himself to his brothers. How did he reveal himself? He gave out his voice, Vayeh, and Yosef started to cry, and the Egyptians heard. He cried with such a deep pain and anguish that the Egyptians heard, and they heard, and the news reached Paro. Now, the expression used here, Vayitein Eskele, he gave his voice. What is the idea of giving one's voice? How do you give a voice? What is the significance of giving a voice? So Hirsch says that it means that he kept it back no longer. He gave it free rein. He let the cry come out. Now, Hirsch also notes that altogether in the whole story, tears appear to flow freely. Whenever it speaks about Yosef, Yosef had tears flowing freely. So he says, tears also need not be genuine, but such an uncontrolled sobbing is a proof of deep feeling, a proof of sincerity. Nosen Kele is a proof of deep feeling and a proof of sincerity. Now, I once interpreted this because they say that there's a difference in tears, if they're sincere tears or not. Tears, when you laugh, sometimes you laugh so hard you start crying. And then there's tears, of course, that you cry from pain. Now, one would say it's the same tears, but actually they examined the tears. And there's a difference in the substance of the tear. I read this in an article, I once brought it up. Now, the substance of tears are different when it comes from tears of anguish or pain or tears of exalting and joy. The tears of anger and pain, like Hirsch describes in another place, comes from the depth of a person's heart. So here we could appreciate this then. The idea was that up to now, Yosef was always crying. He was crying the whole time, but he was crying inside, but he kept it beneath his tongue. But here it says, Vayitein Eskele Bebechi, he let the tears that he had, the crying, come from his soul, and he expressed the tears. That means he gave it free rein. He just like didn't contain himself and restrain himself from showing his emotions. So this shows you that the entire time, Yosef was crying. And it's true, but there were certain periods that the cry just like escaped, that he couldn't... And here, I interpret that meaning of Vayitein Eskele. He didn't have it only in his depth of his spirit, but also Eskolo, the crying went, the bechi in the heart. Now, he told them to leave. It says he didn't want the Egyptians to be there. Why didn't he want the Egyptians to be there? Now, the Ramban says that Yosef could not control himself, so he first wants to say, he quotes Rashi, that Rashi says that he couldn't stand that the Egyptians should stand there and see the shame of his brethren. Meaning he's going to tell his brethren, I am Yosef. So just picture their reaction. There's Yosef, Medrash says Yosef was the youngest of the Shvatim. And when he said, Ani Yosef, just think of the busha that they felt. So what will be the Yom HaDin and the Yom HaTechecha on the Day of Judgment, when we'll have to stand up and our truth and our life will be revealed to us and our shortcomings. So just think of the shame that we will have to see. And actually, l'lifnei mi'ato asit litan din v'cheshbon, that we always think of. In Pirkei Avos, we say that we're going to have to kol ma'asecha, all your deeds are written in, and we'll have to give a judgment. And in our day, it's so easy to appreciate that statement, especially in the last 5 years, for example. Now you have people walking around with little video cameras, and you take the video, and 2 minutes later, it's all there. I went over to the house, they made a sim for that, a grandchild. So like, they were showing constantly, there was like a television, and they kept on the VCR showing the baby. They took pictures of it the first week or something, so it seems, and it will tell you what time it was and what day it was, and that's all you saw is the baby. So, I mean, we can appreciate that every person is born with a little camera and a little tape, and then when we go back to give the cheshbon, we hand over the tape, immediately it's played, everything, every moment of our life, and we have to give a cheshbon, so, oy lay lay, se busha, the shame that we have that we have at that time, because even our thoughts come. I was just speaking the other day in a class that we say to God, Yihula Ratzin in Mefi, Vehegyon Libi, Lefanecha. We finish davening. Let the statements of our tongue and the thoughts of our spirit or mind be reproaching you. Now, you know, when we daven, like we say, we start davening in New York and end up in Los Angeles. You know, our mind is way out. We start Shemin Esrei, and then that's the time to meditate about everything else. So, but at least the words come out. We say, Baruch Ato Hashem. Kem and Main, and at least they hear us say the words. So then we have the chutzpah to say to the Rebbeinu Shlomo of Yihula Ratzin, accept not only our words, but also our thoughts. I mean, what are we kidding? If it would be the words, at least we could get by. But we ask him yet, V'hegyon Libi Lefanecha. So really, this camera is such a camera that gets even the Hegyon Libi. So the Chazal like depict the Busha, when Yosef said, Ani Yosef, it says they couldn't answer him, Ki Nivalo Miponav, they got scared. So the Medrash says, even they said, Oilei le'yosef busha. Woe to the shame that will face us in the Yom HaDin when we are revealed with the truth of our life. But here he didn't want the Mitzrim, the Egyptian, to see the reaction to this revelation. Now, the Ramban says a little bit different. He says, there were people there from Pharaoh and from the Egyptian. There were a lot of people. And they will go ahead, and as soon as they hear Binyamin, as soon as they hear Yehuda petition, so they will ask Yosef to be Mochel Binyamin. You know, before he has a chance to finish up all of this that he'd been planning, they'll immediately say, forgive him, you know, where's your heart? And he didn't want to have to be strong against all of them, so he said first that they should go out. And then he would be able to, you know, to react in the way that he reacted. Now, and then he brings down another interpretation. The first part he said that Yosef could not contain himself in sentence one, but the idea of going out was that they shouldn't hear him mention the Mechire. Why? Because what they'll say, these people, not that they'll react, that they'll be shamed, but to the contrary, they'll say, what kind of Jews are these? They shouldn't, we don't want them in our midst. They shouldn't come into our palaces. Bigdu ba'acheyem, if they act so against their brothers. Gam ba'aviyem bogdu, they also act against their father. What will they do with us? How can we have faith in these Jews? Gam b'Yosef le'aminu, they'll lose all their faith in Yosef. If they can go ahead and they could do that which they do against their own people, so how could we have in any way, how could we go ahead and have trust in them? Now this is something which is a very strong message. It's like I was speaking the past Shabbos, the idea of Anoshim Machim Anachnu, what it has to be for a Goy. The Goy doesn't know the difference from one person to another person. A Jew is a Jew. It's like we were speaking yesterday with some very big person, supposedly, in the community. So he says, a rabbi is a rabbi is a rabbi. What does that mean? It means an Orthodox or Conservative Reform. The idea is they're not masik, so by them is a Jew, is a Jew, is a Jew. And the Mitzri doesn't understand all of this business, so you'll see that the Jews are so that they can do such terrible things. When you show this in front of an Elam, I mean, it's just, so that's what the Ramban tells us, that Yosef didn't want to put this dirty laundry out in public. And that's a very important lesson that you could learn from this Ramban, especially in our days, what we're going through. All right, so now Yosef finally reveals himself, and in sentence 5, says to them, Al-Teyat, don't be that despondent. He tries to console them. He says, because Lemichya, it turned out that this was all for the best. Of course it was a terrible thing, but Hashem has sent me here. Ki Lemichya, Lemichya means literally to preserve life. God has sent me here to preserve life before you. And the way Hirsch interprets it is, I can't prevent your feelings of regret and sorrow, for something that is wrong, and your feelings are therefore justified. But your minds, he says, should temper this by teaching you to look at the deed that happened. Means look at it with the other way. If you wouldn't have sold me, so this couldn't have happened. So a lot of times a person feels sorrow and remorse for what he did, really. But it may turn out differently. So he should feel remorse, that he can't help. But at least it shouldn't be total in a sense. He's showing him a certain consolation, because the end result that came out is that God sent me in sentence 7 was in order to provide for you a great salvation, meaning that you were the purpose. And in fact, Hirsch says, La'achyos lochem li'pleito gedola, that perhaps, he says, it was the whole means to preserve this land for you to your great salvation. You were the purpose of all of this. But assuming he took on that the purpose was that the hunger was going to come there, but he saw that it was beyond our capacity. Sometimes you reach a certain state where you realize that it's not really within the human's hand. And I had this feeling yesterday morning, you know, when you read in the paper, it's going to be over in about an hour, you know, that Arafat is going to speak, and therefore, who knows what's going to be the end, you know. So somebody was telling me it was all disturbed. I mean, it was terrible. So I said, well, it's beyond all the events that are happening now are really totally beyond our comprehension. I honestly believe that. Same time, we have the problem with who is the Jew. These things are all out of our control. So Yosef was trying to tell them, Ki l'michyo shlachani aleichem. And Hirsch speaks later. He says, he quotes on this idea. In a different aspect, he says, Yosef repeatedly points out to the brothers that this is Hashem's desire, how the whole chain of events stands out as divine management. And in fact, he says, hardly any other story presents to our eyes to a similar extent the ways of divine providence. The only other story which will be comparable to this, perhaps, is the Megillah, and the story of Esther and Purim. He says, it is the most living commentary on that wonderful pronouncement of Shlomo HaMelech in Proverbs, that the great master of the world achieves everything from the smallest beginning. As physical, so also social. He lets everything come from the smallest seedling. Without knowing it, without wishing it, folly and sin also are used to serve his end. And we mentioned this a few weeks ago. Medrash continues, by the 2 ounces of silk that Yaakov spent on the embroidery of Yosef's coat, it was only 2 ounces. The Bris Ben Absorim came about to be fulfilled. The Bris Ben Absorim was that you're going to have to go to Egypt in a strange land, and you will be persecuted and afflicted 400 years, such an integral part of history, which has to do with the whole future of mankind, development of the Jews and the exile. I mean, these are rank right next up to creation, in a sense, in the future of man, of the universe. How did it all come about? Because of two little threads. 2 ounces of silk caused it all to happen. He says, in Canaan, the family of Yaakov could hardly have developed into a nation. As they grew in numbers, they would have been scattered among the inhabitants. So he says that the whole way that Klal Yisrael could have been, that's what the Bris Ben Absorim told him, that the whole way that it could have been, they could have become a nation, would be in Mitzrayim. Now, what does that mean? Just to deviate for a moment. The Sipurna tells us in the next chapter, when God reveals himself to Yaakov as he's going down to Egypt, he says, Al tira mirer de Mitzrayim, don't be afraid to go to Egypt. Ki legoy gadol asim chasham, you will there be a great nation. So you could take it on the positive, meaning although you're going to be in Egypt and you're going to be afflicted, I still give you my blessing that you will become a great nation. But the Sipurna says something different. He says, L'gay gadol asim choshon, that you will become there a great nation. Only there you could become a great nation. But if you would sit here, im hoyu bonecho yeshvim po, if your children would stay here, where? In Canaan, in the Holy Land, land of Israel, given to them then. Hoyu mischatnim b'knanis u'misarvin imohem. They would have intermarried and become assimilated. But in Mitzrayim, he says, it will not happen. Why? Because the Egyptians do not eat bread with the Jews. It says, Le'yuchlu ha-mitzrim le'echol lechem. You know, the whole idea of eating bread. You know, there's an idea of pasakum, we call it goyish bread, bishalakum, when the goy cooks, yayin, that the goy touches. All of these things are forbidden. Why did the Rabbanan forbid this? In Golos, they forbid this. Why? So Gemara says, in order that we shouldn't become too close with the goy. When you sit and eat with the goy together, even if it's kosher food, but the koraloch v'achalto mizivko, like it says in Dvorim, will call you and you'll eat from his food, that's the beginning of assimilation. So Egypt was perfect, really, for them to go into Golas, perhaps more so than Aram. If they would have been the Golas by Lavan, right? It seems Lavan could eat the same as them. They were all shepherds. There was no problem. They had to go to a place where they were despised, where they had to be ghettoized because they were abominable to the Egyptians. They can't eat bread. They can't eat bread with the Egyptians. So that was the salvation. If they would have remained in Canaan, where everybody was a shepherd and everybody could eat each other's bread, there wouldn't be any bigotry, and they could belong to the same country club or golf course. So then it would lead to assimilation. So you'll say, so what happened later after Egypt and they came there? Sure, well, after Egypt already, don't forget, they were a nation and they got the Torah. The Torah in Eretz Yisrael will prevent the assimilation. But here we were speaking, like in the time with Shem, we saw what happened. Here we were speaking, there was no Torah. If you're in Canaan without Torah, that's a lesson also. If you're in Canaan without Torah, the assimilation is just as rampant. If you'll be in modern Israel, or Palestine, or here's in modern Israel, if there's no Torah, so you have the assimilation too. So this is what the Sephora tells us, that it was really, and so we see how necessary the sojourn in Egypt was, going back to Hirsch, we see how necessary it was for the purpose of Klal Yisrael's existence, and it all came about because of the 2 ounces of silk. And then he says, in the same way, the fanatic bigotry which built the ghettos was the most active means in God's hand to keep us from the lack of culture of the Middle Ages and to nurse a sense of family life and family happiness, to ensure us a separate province in Egypt as the soil for our development. We had to have a Yosef to go there and become a father to Pharaoh and ruler of the land. And so that no Egyptian could reproach the Hebrew, if you have no business to be here, you were not born in these parts. So therefore, they had to bring about a whole change. There's another change that occurs in the end of the Sedra. We read it and we don't think it's that important. But in just to deviate a moment, in chapter 47, at the end of this Sedra, it speaks there that the hunger was very strong. So if you notice in 47:21 for a moment, the people came to Yosef previously, and he purchased all their land, it says, and he purchased on behalf of the Egyptians. So, and not only that, they wanted to be slaves, but he didn't take them as slaves. He took them as sharecroppers who keep the land, and a certain portion he gets and so on. So there's a sentence there which says in 21, Ve'esa'om he'aviro sola orim, what Yosef did was he redesigned, he exchanged the population. He took the city. It says, though, Haviro Sol La'orim. What does it mean, La'orim? He didn't take the people, we'll say, from Boston and send a few to Providence, a few to New Haven, a few to Brooklyn. But Haviro Sol La'orim, he took the total population of Boston and put them in New York, and New York and put them in Boston. So what did he accomplish this way? To show the ownership of the land, therefore, remains Pharaoh's, obviously. Because therefore, you have to show him, like, that this person stays in the same land, he doesn't really appreciate that he's not the owner. So in that way, the ownership was the testimony that Pharaoh's land. But at the same time, he didn't disrupt the life, the social life of the people and so on. Because this was the same community, it was only a different physical plan. So the way Hirsch says it, Yosef's wisdom tempered the edict by arranging that the residents who had always lived together remained together and found themselves still together with their friends, but in a different environment, so that the old social and communal conditions remained really the same, and there was no complete upheaval by the change, which was a very, at that moment, smart, brilliant, and also compassionate thing to do. But the Chazal say there was another significance there. The idea was no Egyptian was an old inhabitant of his native earth. Nobody could say that my parents came over in the Mayflower, you understand? Because you were never here, you're just here right now. Mayflower was in Boston, now you're in Brooklyn. I mean, so you're also a stranger again. So everybody at that time was in a strange land. So therefore the children of Israel were able to go and be in Goshen, and it wasn't that obvious, and it didn't give people that opportunity to disparage them and so on. But all of this happened, as we said before, because of the 2 ounces of linen. That's what he seeks to emphasize. Now we'll go back onto this. Yosef tells them that they should go back to the father and relate to the father. And we're in 45, we went back. And Yosef said to his brothers, Ha'ed Avichai, like we said, and they became so confused, they couldn't answer him. So then, sentence 4, he says to the brothers, come closer and recognize me. They didn't, because he had a beard. He was a child when he left. So he says, I'm your brother Yosef. And now don't feel bad, because as we said, God had so ordained. And now he said, there's 5 more years. They weren't aware of this. They knew that there was hunger. The hunger had reached Canaan. How long the hunger would be, we don't know. So he says, there's still 5 more years of hunger, where there will not be any chorish v'kotzer. There won't be any plowing and kotzer, any cutting. It's interesting, why does he use what was said, the chorish v'kotzer is an expression. An expression, in the year of hunger, you don't plow and you don't reap. But why did he have to say, asherin chorish v'kotzer, say there's 5 more years. But he adds on, 5 more years of hunger. But he says, asherin chorish v'kotzer. Because if you remember last week, we mentioned the interpretation of the dream that Pharaoh had. He had first the dream with the cows, and then he had the dream with the corn. And we said, the dream of the cows meant the plowing, the Ramban said. Dream of the corn meant the cutting, the harvesting, the cutting. So Yosef, in a sense, here is interpreting, how do I know there's 5 more years? Because of the dream. And the dream presented itself that there's no chorish and there's no kotzer, meaning there was no the animals and also the corn. That's why he perhaps takes out the words asherin chorish v'kotzer, because that's specifically the words of the dream. So therefore there is 5 more years, and God has sent me here to be. Now again, he emphasizes that God has sent me here, and in 8 he says, you did not send me here. So you see how he's trying to assuage their fears. He's emphasizing the idea that you did not send me here. Hurry up, in sentence 9, and go to the father and say, Yosef. Now this is interesting. What are they supposed to say? They're supposed to go to the father and say, Kei Amar Bincha Yosef. So these are the words of your son Yosef. Every word here is significant. Somani Elakim Leodain Lechol Mitzrayim Rido Alai Al Ta'amod. God has placed me as the leader of all of Egypt. Come here and don't stand any longer there. And then in 10 and 11, he goes into the details. He says, when you'll come here, you'll go there in Goshen, and you'll have place, and v'chilkalti eischem shom, and I will be able to provide you with food. Now, what is the idea? The message, really, if you have sentence 9, sentence 10, and sentence 11. So the message, the important part of that message would be what? Yosef's a lie. And sentence 10 and sentence 11 means that he has worked out a way that we will be able to live during the hunger. So now for a moment, they go back to the father, all right? In sentence 26, if you'll notice, it says there further, they came to the father, and they told him, Od Yosef Chai, that Yosef is still alive. You know the beautiful medrash there that they had, Sarah Basosha, they had a granddaughter who was playing, because when you come into an old person like this, they were afraid that he shouldn't have a heart attack, you know, so she, little by little. But it seems anyway, Vayofik Libei Kilehemin Lohem. And his reaction was still, the way Hirsch says, the reaction of Vayofik Libei, meaning that Yaakov was overcome. I'll read you what he says. His heart stood still, it ceased beating, meaning he fainted from joy. Now, Hirsch says his heart stood still in doubt. He didn't know. It seems that he had such, not because he was overcome, that's Ramban learns, overcome an emotion and so on. But Hirsch says that Vayofik Libei, he doubted, so he didn't trust his sons. He felt perhaps that would be a very cruel, unless you will say that he thought maybe, he didn't know that they were going to tell him to come to Egypt. So he thought maybe they want him to rejoice a little bit, and they say, oh, we found Yosef, an old man. They figure so he won't meet him, but at least he'll know he's alive. Maybe they meant that. That's perhaps what he thought. He could have thought that they just meant to see, here is Binyamin and here is all the food, and even Yosef is living, but therefore it wouldn't be a cruel thing that they were doing. Yaakov Avinu thought perhaps not necessarily a cruel thing, but they're only doing this like, see, everything turned out so terrific. But Ki Lehem Ilem, he didn't believe it. So it says there, Vaydaber Elov Es Kol Dibre Yosef Asher Dibre Aleh. Spoke all the words of Yosef that he saw. Vayaris or Agolo. And he saw the wagon. Now Rashi brings down the Gemara that says the Agolos refers to the Eglo Arufo. Eglo Arufo is the law of the animal that is brought. They kill an animal which is supposed to be in commutation to exonerate the people that have no guilt. When you find a body and you don't know who the murderer was, so it says the closest city has to go out and bring this kind of a, not a sacrifice, but it's a certain type of a procedure in order to cleanse their sin. The person might have come through their city and they didn't give him any food or whatever, so therefore they may carry guilt. So to exonerate them from this guilt, it's an offering for it. So they saw that it's very complicated, the law. So he used this, an agola is a wagon, and agola means this effort that they brought. So he wanted the father to recognize that this is what we learned the last time we were studying together. So Yaakov was able to recognize as a simon. So it says, Vatchi ruach Yaakov aviem, and his spirit was revived. Now, there's another interpretation, though. If you notice, what did they tell him in 26? They told him briefly, Eid Yosef Chai V'chiyu Moshe B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. So Yaakov Avinu didn't become the spoil from that. So what if he's a Moshe B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim? I mean, what good is it for him to have Yosef living if he became an Egyptian viceroy? I mean, what good is it to him? He lost the son. Now you have to be a very big person to be able to say something like that. I don't know if I mentioned once, I heard recently, I never heard this before, but a few years ago I heard it. I don't know if you could have appreciated that. It may seem cruel and callous, but when you think into it, because you can't picture Yaakov Avinu, we could picture though. If you could picture Yaakov Avinu saying, rather than having my son be an assimilated Egyptian Secretary of State, I'd rather that, you know, that he wasn't here, that the tragedy would have been true. We could picture that, because you don't want your son. So he tells me, Rabbi Gifter, I heard him tell over in the study, I wasn't aware of this, that my Rebbe Zochem Avrocha, he had the children that were killed, the whole family in the concentration camp. Now, one of his daughters was killed the day before the Russians liberated the camp. So he said, he accepted, you know, the Avelis, and he said, this is the Darkei Hashem. Why? He says, because his daughter, he remembers as a young girl, had socialistic leaning. And he said, it could be that if she would have been liberated by the communists, he could see and envision that she would go and perhaps become a communist. Therefore, he accepted Darkei Hashem. I mean, in a sense, this is what Yaakov Avinu, this same sentiment that's going through, that Yosef being, we'll say, a Moshe, B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, I don't want this. I mean, and by Yofik Libre, meaning that he felt that if this was the meaning of the dreams and everything else, that Yosef should become an assimilated Egyptian person, he didn't believe that this is it. So it says, by he, I said this interpretation once, and then I just recently found, I don't know who, they say people say it, but this was many years ago. So then in 27 it says, Vaydabru Elov Es Kol Divrei Yosef Asher Dibar Aleihem. They said all the words of Yosef that he spoke to them. What are the words of Yosef that he spoke to them? If you look back in sentence that I said before, when we were reading in sentence 9 or 10, it says there, Me'aru Ve'alu Ve'amarta Elov, in 9, hurry up and go up to our father and say to him, Ko Omar Bincha Yosef, Shamani Elekim Le'odain L'chol Mitzrayim, that I'm an appointee of God to be the master over Egypt. That Yosef is still the appointee of God. It's not an assimilated Yosef. So when they told this, as Kol Divrei Yosef, not just that he's living, but Kol Divrei Yosef, the entire statement that he told them, and that's why he told them, make sure to tell the father, not that I'm living in sentence 9, but Somani Elekim, that God has placed me over Egypt. When Yaakov heard that, and then he looked at the wagons and he saw that must denote the fact they were studying Torah, then his spirit became alive. Once his spirit became alive, in sentence 28, Vayema Yisrael, Yisrael said, it's not Yaakov anymore, it's Yisrael, because Yaakov's spirit was with him in Golos, when he was despondent, when he was distraught. Once he rejoiced, and it was a bright moment, then it had to do, then he becomes Yisrael, because Chazal tell us also that the spirit of the father revived, that he rose out of the 20 years state of sorrow and grief, and Shor Sol of Shechina, the Shechina appeared again to him, because when he was in grief, the Shechina doesn't dwell, it only mitech simcha, atzvus, if a person is bonded to grieve, even if he has every reason to be so, but that doesn't mean anything, he can't possess divine spirit. Hirsch points out, right away he's called Yisroel. Up to now, when he pulled himself together, he was always referred to Yaakov, but now it says Vayisa Yisroel, meaning that Rav, it is too much. The glory, the exalted position in which he is to find his Yosef is something above what he could have expected. But at least we see the happiness that Yaakov possessed here. Now, I just said the emphasis was because he said, Somani Elikim, God. The idea of that the name of God was still present in Yosef. Now, if you notice, and sentence going back, in sentence 12, Yosef says to them, "Bihinei enechem ra'os, here your eye sees. Ve'enei ochi binyamin, ki pi hamedaber aleichem, it is my mouth that speaks to you." So the Ramban is troubled here. What does it mean, pi hamedaber aleichem, that my mouth speaks to you? So Rashi says, b'loshen hakodesh, that I'm speaking Hebrew. So the Ramban says you really can't say that because, first of all, what was Hebrew? Was Aramaic or was Canaan? It was the language of the Canaanites. Well, there were many people there. And first of all, it says there was an interpreter between them. So obviously, there were people that understood. So what does he mean, pi hamedaber aleichem mean? He says, ki pi amedaber aleichem, you see that I am speaking to you as the ruler of Egypt. So you know that I'm the ruler of Egypt. The same letters, the same diction, the same dialect, but there's a big difference. Ramban says that Loshon HaKodesh means a holy language. There are no words that are shameful in Loshon HaKodesh. And even a word which in another language has unpleasant a taint or an odor, when you say it in Lashon Kodesh, it sounds differently. For example, if you say the word mamzer in Lashon Kodesh, read it in the Torah, we speak that way, illegitimate child. You say it in other languages, it has a very bad implication. So you see that Lashon HaKodesh, any word that you'll take, if you take a word for the words that in other languages you wouldn't even say, I mean, it's filth. You say it in Lashon HaKodesh, it has no connotation of that, because the language itself has a kedusha. Now, when you go ahead and you'll take Hebrew, modern Hebrew, which you call it, and there are words for everything there, you don't have the Lashon HaKodesh taint to it, because when you read it, it's the same as you read the English or whatever it is. So that's a Lashon HaKodesh, because God spoke it. I think even Levi Eshkol once said, you know, speaking about Yiddish, so what's the sanctity of Yiddish? Yiddish is a jargon that began, who knows how many, sacred Yiddish. So he said, Yiddish might not be Lashon HaKodesh, the holy tongue, but it's a Lashon, a tongue shel kedoshim of holy people. That means that's also holy. A Lashon shel kedoshim, that people lived and gave their lives for this guy speaking Yiddish, that also makes it holy. So he said, Pi amedaber aleichem, Yosef tried to tell them, you see the way I speak to you. I speak in a holy way because tell my father, that God sent me to give you life, that he realized everything is God's deeds and God's actions. So therefore, it says that all of these phrases, God has sent me, not you, this is called the Lashon HaKodesh. So he says, how does this come to an Egyptian? The Egyptian doesn't attribute it to God. So you see that this is true. Atem yatatem kipi amedaber aleichem. Now, there's another interesting pshat, you know, the variation of what the reaction of Yaakov Avinu was when they told him. So there's Daskenim brings this down. I just want you to, it's an interesting thing. That he said, Rav, Eid Yosef Chai, Yaakov, the Daskeni brings one interpretation that Yaakov called Rav. Rav means master to the person who was driving the wagons. So Rav HaChovel, like master driver or something. So he asked him, Eid Yosef Nichai, is it true that my son Yosef is living? I believe you more than them. So it's according to them, the interpretation from the Ashkenim, Balei Tosfos from the Rishonim, that Yaakov said after they told him all of this. So it says he became like alive, meaning that, and by Yomer Yisrael Rav, meaning sir, Eid Yosef Nichai, is this really true that my son Yosef is alive? So it means that after all of this, he still, and we can appreciate it because what he went through, he still had some doubts. Now, it continues in 46, Vayisa Yisrael, Yisrael moved on, chapter 46, V'chol asher lo, and everything that he possessed, he took everything with him. And he came to Be'er Sheva, and he brought sacrifices to his father, a lot of significance to that term, but what does God tell him? Look at sentence 2. Vayomer Elikim liYisrael, God said to Yisrael. Now, we said the term Yisrael means when he's exalted, he's free, he's successful. So God speaks to him, the Yisrael, all of a sudden, B'maris HaLayla, another vision. The Shekhinah has returned, he has visions. But this vision is the same vision, B'maris HaLayla, when the Bris Ben Absorim appeared there in the darkness, as it was very dark, and all of a sudden God told him about what's going to happen in Egypt. Here, B'maris HaLayla, he appears to him again in the darkness. Vayomer, and he says, Yaakov, Yaakov, not Yisrael, Yisrael, but Yaakov, Yaakov. Vayomer Hineini, and he said, here I am. What does this mean, Yaakov, Yaakov? That here's the period of Yaakov, you're happy, you had this moment of happiness, your son is alive. But actually, it's Yaakov that's beginning. And then he says, in the sentence 3 that we quoted before, don't be afraid to go down to Egypt. You will become a great nation. Now, if you notice for a moment, it says in 5, Vayokom Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Yaakov got up to move on. Vayisu bnei Yisrael es Yaakov avihem. Now, Yaakov didn't share this vision with them. They're not called bnei Yaakov. They were still going happy and elated. Vayisu bnei Yisrael. They were going as bnei Yisrael. But he went already with the message of es Yaakov avihem because he knew the distaff side of this, the going down to Egypt, is really the beginning of the period of Golas that Yaakov is destined to lead them. Right. There's just to conclude in sentence 1, sentence 2, if you notice, God appeared to Yaakov Avinu at night, sentence 2, and he said, Yaakov, Yaakov. There are twice that you find God appearing at night. Once when he was going to Lavan, he had a revelation at night, Yaakov, and now when he's going to Egypt. The idea is that in both instances, Yaakov depicted the Jew going into Golas. It was a different type of a oppression that he would face in Egypt. In Lavan, it was what one of jealousy, right? What did Avimelech say? Avimelech said to Yitzhak, Leich meets menu, ki etzamtam menu me'ed. You've become wealthy from us. You've taken too much from us. Go away from us. This sounds very much, that's what he told him. Leich me, menu, ki etzamtam. You've been drinking our water, you've been nurturing your from our food. You've taken too much. What does Lavan say to Yitzhak? What does Lavan say to Yaakov? A very similar thing that he said, that Avimelech said to Yitzchak, Habonos benosai, it's all mine. So God promised Yitzchak that don't worry about this, is all mine. I'll take care of you. I will guard you. He promises that to Yaakov when Yaakov goes to Lavan. All that is, however, is reiterating the bris of Yitzchak to Yaakov. Yaakov thought, however, that this was already the golus that he had to face. So therefore in Vayeshev it says no. Now the Bris Yaakov is starting. The interesting parallel is,
So you'll see here that God is speaking to Yaakov twice. The first time when he speaks to Yaakov, in a sense, he's just repeating the bris of Yitzchak, I will be with you. The second time when he speaks to Yaakov, he repeats the bris, makes the covenant of Yaakov. If you look back at Yitzchak in last week's Sedrit, we also have a similar thing, because 26 verse 1, it says that there was hunger in the land. So an event had to take place in Yitzchak's life. There was hunger in the land. Yitzchak had to move. So God says to him, stay here. But don't be afraid of the hunger, right? Go to Plishtim and don't be afraid. And look at verse 2. God said, don't go down to Egypt. Live in this land, in verse 3, and I will bless you, because you and your children will have these lands. And the Shvuah of Avram will be given to you. And I will multiply your children, and v'yisborchu bizaracha kol geyei haoretz, and all of the nations will bless themselves with your children. Doesn't this sound familiar to you? If you look back in the beginning, I'm sorry, all these places, I hope you're following me. If you look back in Lech Lecha, in the beginning of Lech Lecha, when God gives the blessing to Avram, and he starts giving him there the covenant, what does God promise him in chapter 12, verse 2 and verse 3? Chapter 12, verse 2 is the covenant of Avram. Ve'avorcha mevarachecha ve'nivrichu b'cho kol mishpachoso adomo. Right? And verse 2 was, I will make you to a great nation, l'gei gadol ve'agad lo shemecha. So chapter 12, verse 2 and 3 is very similar to chapter 26, verse 3 and 4. There's no mention made of any problems, of any fear. Just stay here, you will become prosperous, multiply, and so on. So this is like a reiteration of the bris of Avram. But then Yitzchak faced a new situation when Vaikanu Esei Plishtim. The Plishtim, right, up to then he was living Avram's bris. The bris of Avram carried over to the bris of Yitzchak. He was saved from his wife, the same thing as like Avram. He had that bris of Avram there. But he didn't find himself in a new situation. To find himself in a new situation, that he found himself Vaikanu Esei Plishtim when they started having Kenan. Now the blessing that God had given him about being fruitful, multiply, is all fine. But now he is in a different circumstance. Now he has to face the animosity and the jealousy. So that's right immediately when the second blessing came to make the Bris Yitzchak. The parallel now when we go back to Yaakov, when he leaves love to go to Laban, it's reiterating the bris of Yitzchak. I will be with you. Don't be afraid. Now he comes back from the bris of Yitzchak. He's going down to Egypt. He thought he's going with the bris of Yitzchak. So God says, no, you're not going with the bris of Yitzchak. There's now the bris of Yaakov. Anechi ered mimcha mitzrayma. You have what to fear. It would be false to say don't fear. Well, of course you fear. What they did to you, you have what to fear. As an individual. But as a nation, one thing I could tell you, that I will be with you and you will come out as a nation. That's why perhaps when it's in that sentence, chapter 46, if you notice, before God appears to him, how does he react? He brings a sacrifice, right? If you notice verse 4, chapter 46, verse 1, says, Vayasa Yisrael, that Yisrael moved away and he came to Beersheba. By Yizbach Zvachim, he brought sacrifices to who? To God. But what does it say? L'lekei Oviv Yitzchak, to the God of his father Yitzchak, because he held he was still under the bris, the relationship, the covenant that he had with God was L'lekei Oviv Yitzchak. So he, as Yisrael, is still saying L'lekei Oviv Yitzchak. So God immediately says to him, Yaakov, Yaakov, you're now going into the Yaakov, and he gives him the covenant of Yaakov. So this is the way we can understand the covenants of the fathers, changing according to their situation. And if you follow, there's such a remarkable parallel from one life overlapping the second overlapping the third. And the bris starting within the circumstances in that person's life. All right, this is, I think, a little clarification on the brisos.